Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of The Ecocentrics. I'm Tom.
And I'm PK, and this week we're going to be discussing the impacts of sport on the environment.
The good, the bad, and the potential need to swim a little bit more in the future.
Yeah, so let's dive in. So, Tom, what kind of sports do you play?
I play the most boring old man sports in the world. I play squash. There are about six people my age that play squash, and they're my only friends in life. So it's a bit of a challenge. I feel like I've chosen the most abstract sport.
What did you play growing up?
I played rugby till I was about 15.
What?
I always used to get such bad headaches. And I feel like, retrospectively, given all the evidence that's come out of how bad rugby is for us, maybe those headaches were not a good sign. What about you, PK?
Let's see, as we've noted on previous episodes, I played tennis but couldn't do a backhand, so I'd switch hands, which you can't do in competition. I was really into gymnastics, did a lot of gymnastics growing up. I also did ballet, which some people don't think is a sport, but I challenged people. I used to think that actually I was going to be, my career would be as a professional dancer, and I was recruited to join the Texas Ballet at the age of 15.
Wow. I feel like I learn something every week from you on this show.
Yep. And I was selected to take a specialty course with the director of the New York City Ballet as well. But those dreams did not transpire.
And now you're here with me.
Now look at me. Yeah. But I did in high school, I wanted to play what we call soccer. I know here it's called football, but we didn't have a girls' team. So I had to just settle for being the boys' soccer manager, the soccer manager of that team. So yeah, but soccer, football, is massive here.
Yeah, and it's also an environmentally questionable sport at the moment. UEFA, the Union of European Football Associations, has had a massive expansion. And basically means there's going to be a lot more football on international stages. So more people flying between countries, going all over the place, and actually good for some of the smaller teams to participate, but really bad environmentally. I think that the figure that I saw was somewhere in the region of 2 million extra tons of carbon just coming from the extra flights to go and see those games.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that people aren't considering. There's a whole lot of flying going on for this. And sometimes there's a whole lot of building of stadiums that won't get full use very often.
Yeah, and we saw that obviously last year as well with the World Cup over in Qatar, where they said it was a carbon neutral World Cup. But actually, when you looked into it, that was basically just using these NAF offsets that we've talked about before. The fact that it wasn't really genuinely reducing its emissions to zero, and all of the things that go alongside of it were really environmentally damaging, not to mention all of the atrocities in terms of social labor and slave labor.
In different parts of the world, there are very different labor laws, and in some cases, it can be what is considered modern day slavery. And so is that something we want as part of our sporting environment? I don't think so.
And I think it builds into this whole big picture of sports washing going on at the moment. The amount of people and places, and particularly if you look at Saudi Arabia right now, that are using sports to cover up all the bad things they're doing, and just ignoring the atrocities which they're committing. And it's like, oh, no, it's fine because we've got an excellent football league because we're willing to pay everyone stupid amounts of money. I remember earlier this year, some see him as the world's best footballer at the moment, Kylian Mbappe, was given an offer to go and play in the Saudi Arabian League. And the offer was for £750 million a year.
Whoa!
And the reason they're doing it is just so they can continue extracting all their fossil fuels, continue doing all the atrocities that they're doing in terms of human rights violations. And basically, they're saying, but we're doing amazingly at sport. Come and watch our sport. Look how good we are. Don't worry about anything else. Look at this sports league we've got.
Yeah, and I know we need to bring all partners across the globe, whether they're a multinational company or a country that we're just not aligned with their human rights. However, the way I sort of look at it is that, so in terms of my tourist dollars, even though I might work with a country or an organization where I feel like I can advance sustainability or human rights, it's a lot different when I look at my discretionary money. So my discretionary tourism dollars, if it's a country where I wouldn't want my daughter living because she wouldn't have the same rights as my son, I just don't give my money to them in terms of tourism. I'll work with them in terms of human rights, aid, sustainability, and that's something that we should think about as well.
I actually disagree with you on one of those points, PK.
I'm sure.
The big one I've got this issue with is kind of working with those organizations and those countries. I don't think we should be doing any of that. Mm. I think we are completely legitimizing them by working with them. by going and doing things with them. And the prime example is fossil fuel companies. We are legitimizing the work of fossil fuel companies by working with them. And we know since the 1970s, they were engaged with this program. And we said, can you help us on the path to decarbonization? They kept saying, yes, we can help you. Basically have done nothing because it's within their vested interest to keep things going as normal. And just days ago, there was a massive announcement from Shell, even though they've been saying, oh, we're going to be doing so much on net zero, to reinvest those of finance in fossil fuels. So I don't think they could be trusted to be in this space. I do not think we should be giving them the license to operate. We should not allow them to be here. They need to be outside of the rooms where things are happening, and we do not have them in those spaces. That's my opinion.
You know, it's always really nice to have you reminding me of my North Star. So Tom, what are the overall impacts we're looking at here in terms of sport?
I think that's really interesting, and it's something which maybe isn't necessarily talked about as much as it should be. And I think the narrative is starting to change, but slowly. I know there's been this massive forum process going on in Bristol. So it's called the Blue Earth Summit, which has gone on in Bristol. And someone from Sport England spoke there a couple of weeks ago, basically saying our sports are going to be severely impacted by climate change, and we have to do something to make a difference. And there are so many ways that we see this. We see it in terms of increased exposure to heat stress, impact on sporting performance, and potential lost days from flooding. And this has happened even in the last few weeks with the flooding that's gone on across the Midlands. Pressure on resources. And the one that I find really interesting, and there's a paper that explores this in some detail, is that actually officials within sporting arenas make worse decisions on really hot days. So as a sports fan, you're also going to get really naffed off if it's a hot day because the ref's going to make some bad decisions. If you're a passionate sports fan, like the amount of times I spend with people who are Stoke fans are just raging about the referees, they're going to make even worse decisions when it's 40 degrees outside.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that, I think those decision-making powers hold true across all spectrums, not just sports, but yeah.
Exactly. But we are seeing these impacts here and now on sporting events, venues, occasions. A big one that we saw was through Carlisle Football Club. I don't know if you've seen any of the photos of what happened there, PK.
I haven't.
So it is catastrophic, some of the impacts that have gone on up there. So during Storm Desmond a few years ago now, the pitch was completely flooded. It went completely underwater from Carlisle Football Club, and they lost around about 7 weeks worth of play. Obviously terrible for the football club and all the things they're doing, but also financially, it cost them about £3 million in restoration and lost revenue. So massive, massive impacts there. And the most recent estimates say that roughly a quarter of England's 92 league clubs could regularly be flooded within the next 3 decades.
Wow. Regularly flooded. Wow. And so all that investment that's been put into that infrastructure, and also the investment that that city or that community is planning on coming in via that sports vehicle, could evaporate or be highly damaged and dented.
What's interesting as well, isn't it? And this is kind of a philosophical musing more than anything else. I often draw the analogies of football clubs being the 21st century churches, the places that people go, and it's their weekly worship. And don't get me wrong, I do this as well. So like, I'm part of this bubble. It's not me separate to it. But actually, what's the social ramification if those clubs are underwater? What happens to those people without that connection, that unity? And as much as football does do some bad things and other sports do some bad things as well, actually, they're amazing places of community. And amazing places to bring people together to think about things positively. So what happens if those things can't go on anymore? What are the impacts of that?
Yeah, and in terms of that, thinking about, there are lots of kids that are involved in these sort of football clubs and sports early on. And generally, that doesn't end up including more girls in the younger years than in the adult years, which is another thing to consider as well, the terms of equity. So, you know, sometimes where you and I have been involved, where we're having discussions with different communities about what kind of investment should be brought into this space that's going to be disused. And a lot of times there's people rushing in going, we're going to do another football pitch, we're going to do this. And it's like, well, okay, but for adult women, how does that help them? It is great, but it often, as an adult, benefits a certain segment of this population, sex-based usually, and it's usually men, because on the weekends, we certainly don't see all the women, all the moms jamming up the trains, dranning up the pubs and going to these sports activities. It is heavily male-dominated. Not to say that that isn't something that men should be doing, But when we're looking at the financial investment, does this benefit the whole community equally or not?
Completely. And thanks so much for bringing it up, PK. Obviously, my position as a bloke makes me forget these things sometimes. So it's nice to actually be reminded and put that at the center. But yeah, so important. And there's like so much feminist economic literature around this as well.
Yeah. And additionally, and it's not even just about going, well, let's do equal promotion of this sport to both men and women, or let's ensure that we have equal this or equal that, because is that even what women necessarily want as a whole? Some women would, but are there other activities that women would like to see that investment used for?
And I think it comes to that really interesting question of equality versus equity, whereas we can give everyone equal access to something, but actually people probably want different things. They want equity instead.
Absolutely. Points to remember in terms of sustainability, the planet, whether it's sports or anything else.
One final point on that. One of my mates, Kevin, he was working in New Zealand just before the COVID lockdown. He worked on one of the ski slopes over there. And I remember calling him when he was out there and him telling me that they basically had to spray snow, fake snow, onto the slopes because of climate change. And I'm there like, you're just using all this energy. And he's like, yeah, I know. Got to use all this energy, produce all these emissions just to keep the ski slopes happy. And obviously that's for a particular part of society which can afford to ski as well. Winter sports is a really interesting one and obviously going to be massively impacted in terms of the potential for winter sports in the future. But the fact that the way they're solving it is, oh yeah, we'll just blast some more carbon into the atmosphere and make some more snow.
It's really stunning. I mean, you can sort of see their point in a sad sense, because obviously that particular industry is a financial investment in that community. But at the end of the day, we can't keep doing that because we can see the scientific evidence-based writing on the wall. I guess on the other end, water sports will pick up. So this week, we have yet again another sustainability superstar. We seem to be naming a dearth of climate criminals, but we know they outweigh the sustainability superstars. However, it's really nice sometimes to really focus on these. And this month's sustainability superstar is sports related, and it is the Forest Greens. Tom, have you ever been to a Forest Greens match?
No, but I've always wanted to go and see the new stadium, which is all wooden and like carbon sequestering paradise.
I actually have been to a Forest Green Rovers match, and it was at Burton Albion. It was a sustainability networking event. John Whittleson was community organizer there. He's now with Wrexham, which I understand why. What a coup to be at Wrexham with some famous Hollywood movie stars. And I went there and it was a really great match to watch that game and to learn more about Forest Greens. They're the only vegan football club in the entire world. I believe they run entirely on renewable energy, and they were founded by the founder of Ecotricity.
Yeah. And it's not only that, they've also got some really interesting transport stuff.
Ooh.
So when we look at particularly football's emissions, most of the emissions, what we call scope 3 emissions. So they're not the direct controlled emissions of the organization. So the electricity, they use their own vehicles. It's the fans coming in. And they've put in a whole load of strategies to try and mitigate fan-based emissions too. So actually putting in things like electric charging points on site, making sure there are shuttle buses available, and really just trying to nail the fans' emissions as well. But what I would say is everyone talks about Forest Green Rovers, so everyone knows who they are. I actually want to shout out another, and this is a football club here again, which is Reading, because I think they had a really interesting communication thing a few years ago. They changed their strips, and on their sleeves, they had the climate stripes. So you could see the warming over time on the sleeves. So every time they went out to play, you could see this. And then people would say, oh, what the hell is that on their sleeve? Well, there's kids walking around with a Reading strip on. I mean, there's probably only about 4 kids walking around in Reading strip on. But the 4 kids that do have Reading strip, they've got the climate stripes on them as well. So actually seeing it on the main stage as well.
I think, is it Professor Ed Hawkins from Reading University was the one who did the climate stripes. So that's pretty cool. Nice shout out. I'm going to actually give a harken back to an episode we had, I think in season 2, maybe season 1. I want to shout out to another team, and that's in the United States. And they were a baseball team, and they were the Emeralds baseball team. And then for a specific period of time, they changed to the Exploding Whale baseball team. And they had shirts and branding on their site. And it was to highlight the issues of warming waters and oceans on the impact of sea life, because it was also really close to that area. Back in the 70s, a whale beached and they tried to explode it. So I thought that was really funny and a unique way of highlighting that, and brought it into sports in a community that might not necessarily hear these climate related messages.
And there's even more to it as well. There's so many great examples, and they go from the massive ones we've had Forest Green, Reading, and that baseball club there. But then also there's Crewe, which is a smaller football club, which is in, I think it's installed something like 2,000 solar panels, working with other providers to reduce their carbon footprint. But then at a really, really local level, there's clubs which are doing other things. So one that I was researching about for a project a few weeks ago is St. Mary's Gaelic Athletic Club. So really niche sport, really niche club, but they basically invested 25 grand to upgrade all of their work, upgrading club windows, heating systems, external lighting, and basically trying to massively reduce the energy demand and increase energy efficiency there. So it's not just something that big clubs have to do. Small clubs can do it as well. And they did this with some grant support. So really interesting. It also saved them some money on the way. The other, I'm gonna call out a government for good practice here. This is a shocker for me.
Oh, news alert.
It's the Irish government. So they've got some really interesting work around sport, because I talk about this all the time, that sporting institutions are what we call anchor institutions. So they're key parts of our community which can deliver and drive change. So when people see them, they can understand that they can do something. So most big clubs, the big football clubs, for example, have thousands and thousands of fans coming in every single week for people to engage with. So what the Irish government have done is recognized this, and they give any sports team that wants it supported access to electric vehicles. So they help them with grants and support to be able to access EV charging and then be able to install that on site as well.
Wow, that is pretty significant.
And one final one for by us, PK. You might like this one. So Port Vale, they've been working in collaboration with a university in the local area, and they're looking at putting some carbon units next to their products when the people go to the match day shop. So basically, when you go and buy a pint, it should be like, oh, what's more carbon intensive, a Carling or a Coors? So then you can be like, oh, actually, I can make a decision based on this. And FYI, a Carling is better for the environment. So if you're making the choice tonight, go for a dirty Carling rather than a dirty Coors. That is the more environmentally friendly option.
Done. So, Tom, what if we aren't into group sport or we're not into football? Are there things that we can do right now?
Yeah. So many things you can do. I think if you're already part of any clubs, go and speak to them and see what you can do. Work with others to make some initiatives. But then I did this really fun thing a couple of years ago now, when I was at a conference in Amsterdam, and they started the conference up with what's called plogging. So basically, it's a cross between litter picking and jogging. So you go on like a nice morning run, and as you're going around, you pick up litter. And it's like a nice wholesome activity. You bring people together and actually do something with it. One of the best bits of advice I've had around like the litter pick side of life before is try and do your five a day. So if you're going out for a run, try and pick up five pieces of litter on the way around. Nice, easy, quick win, simple improvement for the local area. Not going to change the entire world, but it's a nice first step.
You know, I love that, Tom, because this might be a good fitness activity for me. If I go out and say, all right, until I pick up 20 pieces of litter, I can't come home. So I'm sure I could do that in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I did make the mistake. I did it a few weeks ago. And I was out and I grabbed a dog poo bag. And there was a good reason it had been left on the floor. The poo bag had a big hole in it. So as I picked it up, splat. So be careful with the poo bags.
You know, poo seems to be a common theme. I mean, we definitely don't go a season without poo being mentioned. So you've come to the end of our episode this week of the Ecocentrics on sports and the impact on the environment.
Hopefully you've been inspired to jump in some water, as there'll be much around you, as PK has made us aware moving forward. And if there's any sports you take up as a result of this, do let us know.
Reach us at hello@theecocentrics.com. And also, we are all over the place on our socials.
Until next week.
Adios.
Bye.